Jason, the good news is the Bears are still the number two seed in the NFC playoffs. The bad news is they did not look good in a loss to the Lions on Sunday afternoon. We'll break that down and more coming up on Hallis Intrigue. Hi, I'm Patrick Finley. He's Jason Leisure. Jason, Bears lose 19-16 at Soldier Field to the Lions. They were down 16-0 at the end of the third quarter. The whole thing just kind of felt flat, like a dud.
Right.
It was the energy was not what I had hoped it would be inside the stadium or on the field. What do you think?
I think two or three times in the last few weeks, you and I have talked on here about just how much more interesting the games are. When you flip back the calendar a year and you're sitting at Soldier Field in late December watching them lose 6-3
right
to the Seahawks, a team that's not even going to the playoffs, 6-3. And the games have just been so exciting for most of the season. They've been so good to watch. How does 19-16 losing at home to the Lions sit with you as entertainment?
Well, for one, it was
the
fewest points they'd scored since their loss in Baltimore, which might be one of the sneaky low points of the season, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, here's the deal. Here's where things stand now. They're the two seed. That's great. They're 11-6. That's great. They had gotten really good play from Caleb Williams for a while. That's great. They will open the playoffs at home Saturday against the Packers, 7 p.m. on Amazon Prime. If you don't have it, get your parents' login or whatever you got to do.
I believe they will air that locally over the air.
You're right. I don't know what channel that will air on locally, but yeah, they have to. You're right. That is all good. But if you're and that's really where the focus needs to be. Forget the matchup with the Lions or them getting swept by the Lions. It's really all about what are their chances going forward. And we do this every week. Do you feel better or worse about where they're headed based on what you saw? And sometimes they win and we feel worse. Sometimes they lose, like the 49ers game, and we feel a little bit better about what they're capable of. This kind of, I don't want to say darkens my outlook on them, but I mean, it's a negative, mm-hmm. obviously, because they played so poorly, not just losing, but playing so poorly. The question is how much of a negative it is. How much does this dampen what you think they're, your optimism for what you think they're capable of? It doesn't outweigh everything that we've seen for the last several months, back to week three when they beat the Cowboys. It doesn't overshadow or outweigh all of that. But, Pat, this was supposed to be their on-ramp to the playoffs. They had already clinched their spot. They were pretty set in the two seed regardless, especially with Philly planning to rest their starters. That is how they got the two seed, by the way, if you're not aware. They backed into it even while losing to the Lions. Philly didn't play their starters and blew it. Blew the opportunity, lost to the Commanders. Ben Johnson talked about regaining the momentum after losing to San Francisco. He talked about maintaining that intensity, that all gas, no brakes attitude that they've had all year. And this was so far from what he was demanding of them this week. That's what makes me concerned a little about them going into the first round of the playoffs.
I think it amplified the two big worries I have about them. Number one, that their defense is just, despite leading the league in takeaways, just not dangerous enough. And, you know, they did a good job in the red zone today the way that they did when they played the Packers here a couple weeks ago. But the nicest thing you can say about this defense is, you know, today they didn't give up six, they gave up three. And that was, you know, they gave up 19 points. I don't think anybody left the stadium today feeling like the defense had played a good game.
Yeah, normally that would be a good number.
Right. Didn't feel like it.
But, Pat, they Detroit, you're right, because it has been all season, and it was Sunday, this kind of hero ball on defense where they are not a reliable, good defense play-to-play because they don't get pressure on opposing quarterbacks and they don't really stop the run. And then they come up with these amazing plays. These interceptions by Kevin Byard and Nashawn Wright and Tremaine Edmonds. These forced fumbles by Tyreek Stevenson and Nashawn Wright. And they get stops sometimes in the red zone they're one of the better red zone defenses. They were last time I looked. I don't know where they stand as of this recording. But if you look at the Lions' possessions, the Lions had scoring opportunities on 5 out of their first 6. And the Bears were fortunate to hold them to field goals 3 times and a missed field goal on one of those. The Lions did not go 3-and-out today, Sunday. They didn't. They pushed into Bears territory on all but one of their possessions. And the Lions are a 500 team that's not going to the playoffs. I think what that kind of defensive play is going to do, like, we don't even have to get into all these hypotheticals about what if they have the Rams, what if they have the Eagles, what if they have the 49ers again. What about the Packers?
Mm-hmm.
Because for all the tumult that they've gone through, and they've lost 4 in a row now going into the playoffs, Green Bay has, going in as the 7 seed after they were a Super Bowl favorite, Matt LaFleur is one of the best offensive play callers in the NFL. Jordan Love is a top 6, top 8, top 10. He's for sure a top 10 quarterback in the NFL, and he's elite against the Bears. He has roasted the Bears his entire career. Even when he wasn't really doing well overall, he'd be able to light up the Bears. You play like this, like they did Sunday against the Lions, in the wild card game against Green Bay, it's not going to be pretty.
No, and the other major concern I have about the Bears that was amplified today was Caleb Williams back to his old ways of getting off to slow starts. At the end of the third quarter, Jason, the Bears were down 16-0. Caleb was 11 for 20 for 89 yards, a pick, and a 47.9 passer rating. You can't win with that.
Before that drive, he was 9 for 18 for 66 yards. So, you know, if you kind of think of, like, when was the point where he turned it on? It was the last couple plays of the third quarter. Prior to that, he's sitting at 66 yards.
Yeah.
You're not beating anybody with that.
No, and, you know, the Bears didn't have the ball very often because the Packers were kind of grinding them Lions. Into the ground. Or the Lions.
Why do we keep doing that? Because we're just thinking the Packers.
we're
really on the next game.
Yeah, we moved on to Green Bay.
We really are.
But we've heard Caleb talk all year about, you know, once we get that first down, we kind of get moving.
Yeah.
They had 4 first downs in the first 4 possessions. That's not going to do it. And Caleb was inaccurate. Caleb had a lot of guys drop a lot of passes. And then he comes on at the end. And, you know, 44 seconds into the fourth quarter, they're down 16-0. He hits Jahdae Walker for a 25-yard touchdown. That gives him the Bears' franchise passing record, by the way. He passed Eric Kramer, who was at 38-38.
From 1995.
For 30 damn years ago.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? Caleb ends up going, I think, 9 for 13 for 120, 130 yards. And 2 touchdowns in the fourth quarter, right?
Right, and two-point conversions.
Yeah.
You know, they get the
I forgot about that.
They get the pass to Walker, and then they hand off to Menungai for 2. And then later, great catch by Colson Loveland for a 1-yard touchdown, and then an even better catch by Cole Kmet for the conversion that may have rung his bell a little bit. And all of a sudden, the Bears are 16-16, and they've got the ball. And they've got the ball after a tipped pass landed in Kevin Byard's arms. And this is everything they've done all year, right? This is Kevin Byard intercepts a pass at the perfect time. Caleb gets the ball, and they move down the field. And instead of the Superman stuff that we're used to seeing, it was literally a slant past the Luther Burden that hit him in both hands and fell to the ground. Caleb getting an intentional grounding call, trying to throw the ball away from the pocket while he was hit. And then that gives him 3rd and 20, Jason, and he checks down to Kyle Menungai, and all of a sudden, they've got a punt again. Ben Johnson did admit that he was tempted to go for it on 4th and 5 at the Bears. What? Where were they? At the
4th and 5 at their own 31, 1:55 left. He was tempted to go for it, Patrick, because he said they had all 3 timeouts and they believed they would be getting the ball back.
No, that's why he didn't go for it. That's why he punted.
I misunderstood them.
Yes,
I'm not sure what
he said that they decided to punt because they plan on getting the ball back with all their timeouts. I would argue to you that maybe – I think going for it at your own 31 is lunacy. But I think you could argue that the way the Lions had been moving, if the Bears had gone for it at their own 31 and not gotten it, the Lions probably – I mean, score somehow, but probably so quick that the Bears get the ball back. And that's been what they've wanted for the last, 6 weeks, 8 weeks? They want to be the team with the ball at the end. There's no magic, out of Caleb. They punt. The Lions complete a pass to Amon-Ra St. Brown. That's 26 yards to get them to the 26. They kicked a field goal at the gun, a 43-yarder to win the game. I mean, I think I'm encouraged by the fact that they looked in the fourth quarter the way they've looked a lot this year when they're playing well. But again, I mean, the whole story of the season is the Bears dig a hole and then do these fabulous things to climb out of it. And this time they couldn't climb out of it.
And Ben Johnson has told you the truth about that throughout. He has said, on one hand, he loves the confidence and the belief that they have, that they are never out of it. On the other hand, that is a scary way to live. That is not always going to work out for you. And they would much rather be in a position where they are putting teams away and not needing that. And they have not done a lot of that this season at all. And that prospect of being basically through three quarters, Caleb's not playing well, your defense isn't getting stops, and you're down 16-0, you tell me that is the scenario in a playoff game going into the fourth quarter? That is a low, low, low percentage play. It's funny that you mentioned use the word magic, because when the offense got the ball back, tie game, Grady Jarrett after the game was asked, "Did you think you had it then?" That it was, and Grady Jarrett said, "I thought we had it when we were down 16-0." He said, "You know that Bears magic, it's been there for us all season." That was what he called it, Bears magic, and it didn't on Sunday, and it isn't always going to. When you guys hear about the improbability of all these wins that they've pulled off against the Raiders, the Commanders, the
Packers,
the Giants, the Packers. I mean, having to get an onside kick to force overtime to beat the Packers. When you hear about the improbability of that, that is not people hating on the Bears. That is not us in the media criticizing them. It's telling you how hard it is and how unlikely it is to do that, and how thus unlikely it is going to be to replicate that. And Pat, that gets so much harder when you're in the playoffs, because everything tightens up. Not only are the opponents better by definition because they're also playoff teams, but the amount of scrutiny in the game plans, the effort that that everybody there, nobody takes plays off in the playoffs. I mean, it is going to be really, really tough to pull out one of these magical escapes. The Bears cannot put themselves in that position. I don't think they will win a game in the playoffs if they play for three quarters like they did for three quarters against the Lions.
Yes. Oh, for sure.
I can't see that happening in a playoff game.
Yeah, I mean, they're lucky they were only down 16 here. You mentioned the playoffs and the different level of precision and the different level of intensity. Do you have a reason in your head why it was flat today? I mentioned this walking into the game today. I said to Mark Grody, actually, I said this feels weird to me. And it wasn't because I'd sensed anything from the tailgate or whatever, but it almost felt like today was the undercard for the likely Packer game next week. And I just feel like the fans didn't have it. The teams sure as hell didn't give the fans any reason to be excited for the first three quarters. It just felt weird to me. Do you have a reason? I mean, the Bears were back to doing pre-snap, penalty stuff. You know, they jumped off sides on fourth down. The nose tackle did that while he was staring at the ball. DJ Moore, at some point, Caleb tries to send him in motion. DJ Moore doesn't really know what's happening and kind of stumbles 2 feet over and gets flagged. Mm-hmm. Just a lot of dumb stuff. And
the intentional grounding that you mentioned that gave him 3rd and 20 when the game was on the line, a wild snap. Some kind of error in the snap on a shotgun snap from Drew Dahlman to Caleb Williams that Caleb recovered at the 2. Could have been a total disaster, but he threw the ball away from the interception. He actually had an open receiver.
I know.
I think that the answer that you won't get from the locker room, but what I would suspect is what you said, that this was kind of a blow-off game. Their postseason track was basically set. There was not a lot that was going to change. Even if they fell to the 3 seed, that's not a huge change probably in a lot of their minds. It is in Ben Johnson's mind and in my mind, mm-hmm. because you automatically, by getting the number 2 seed, which they did, will play the first 2 rounds at home. And in a wide open playoff field, every little advantage could add up to tilt it in your favor and make a run. But I think there was a lot of just dismissiveness of the importance of this game. They didn't say that publicly, and they wouldn't say that publicly. But Jaquan Brisker said something to this effect after the game. He said that it was flat. It was pretty bad. And he's Jaquan Brisker said that he was, you know, ready to roll.
The word was turnt, Jason. He said he was turnt.
With a T, yeah. That this was not apparently an issue for him. But when asked about the defense at large, he said something to the effect of, we're playing at home. We're playing a division game against the Lions. Ben just came from there. That's his previous team. And they smoked us in week two. We should have been a little more motivated than we looked.
Yeah, and I don't understand why they weren't, especially because
with the two seed on the line,
I think you and I agree, too, that one of Ben Johnson's great traits as a first-time head coach is that his guys typically rise to meet the moment. I can't remember too many games when you go, boy, they just don't have it.
No, and that's one of the things that people didn't know about him. What you knew was he was this mad scientist, just brilliant play caller.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't know how could he manage the day-to-day, how could he run a staff, how could he be the big voice in the room, motivating the players, keeping everybody on track, running practice, things like that. And he very clearly has shown a talent for that.
Why do you think he said himself that they had one of their more simple game plans of the season?
Yeah.
Why do you think that was?
Interesting.
Do you think he's hiding or he's keeping some stuff for next week?
I think so. I asked him and he said no, not
right.
at all.
Well, what's he supposed to say?
But I think that right. what you just said is the case of he's not going to admit that publicly. But all of that, though, if that's the case, I mean, then that's kind of, if that was true, then it would be a little bit hypocritical, I think, to then be frustrated with the players not playing well. And it's kind of like half in, half out. I mean, does this game matter or does it not?
Well, he said after the game, he said, you know, we don't rest guys, we play football.
Yeah.
And by the way, he was rewarded by having a game 6 hours or 6 days later instead of seven. Against the Packers team that rested everybody today. So maybe he'll rethink that. I'm curious whether you think that the chewing that he gave the guys yesterday, and I'm sure, you know, over the next couple days over their performance today, is that a bad thing? I mean, I'm sure they wanted to cruise to a 35-0 win here and go in the playoffs feeling great about themselves. But is there something about a wake-up call on the eve of the playoffs that could be helpful? Or would you rather have smooth sailing?
I don't know exactly, but I do think that Ben Johnson ripping into them is effective because he has credibility. Mm-hmm. He had so much credibility. It's a lot different than if you think back to 20 or 21, Matt Nagy ripping into the defense when everybody knows he has really no idea about the defense, that mm-hmm. that defense is basically a separate team mm-hmm. in the Matt Nagy era, and Matt Nagy doesn't have all the results on his side, especially those couple of seasons at the end. I think Ben Johnson lighting a fire under the team works because his methods have worked. Mm-hmm. He came in with more credibility than either of the last two Bears coaches for sure, because he was really running his own thing in Detroit and had the results coming in, had the credentials coming in for them to want to listen in a way that Matt Eberflus and Matt Nagy didn't have. Matt Eberflus because nobody knew who he was, and Matt Nagy because Andy Reid runs the show down there. I mean, that wasn't his project. And then throughout the season, Ben Johnson has gotten results. It would have been interesting. What week was it where he called out the team for poor practice habits? Was that going into week two in Detroit or week three in
Dallas?
Might
have been week three. Yeah.
It would have been interesting to see him keep going with that kind of rhetoric if they were losing, because I think that would wear thin.
I think it's easier to be a peacetime president than a wartime president.
When you get results, though, people will listen in that building. They will listen to everything you say because you are showing them week by week, and Ben Johnson has shown them all season that buy into what I'm talking about, because we win when we do that.
You know,
I think it's easier for him. I think he has said this too. It's easier for him to coach hard when they've won. I don't know how much he's going to want to rehash and beat on them for the game Sunday against Detroit rather than really turn the attention forward right away for Green Bay.
You know how I like silly symbolism things? You know, my favorite thing in the world, Matt Nagy wearing the George Halas fedora into the game in 2019. Jason hates it so much he's allergic to it. Fun fact. If this whole season started off with us wondering how Caleb and Ben were going to mesh.
Pat, it started off with Caleb wondering how Caleb and Ben were going to mesh.
And thinking Ben hated him.
He just stole us that.
On Sunday morning, or midday Sunday, yeah. Caleb walks into the stadium wearing Ben Johnson's high school football jersey. A replica, not the real thing. Yeah. But he was a he was the quarterback at, what, A.C. Reynolds High School in Asheville, North Carolina. Go Rockets. Wore number 12. Is that a good button to put, at least on the regular season here, that regardless of what happens going forward, the marriage between the quarterback and the coach is what they hoped it would be?
Yeah. You would have heard so much more about that from Caleb had the game not gone as badly as it did.
Caleb felt like talking about anything.
That's what we'll get into next, is what you guys probably didn't see is what the post game was like. Because Caleb and Ben Johnson, it was a little bit different. But, yeah, you have right now a situation with Caleb Williams and Ben Johnson that is not polished, not perfect, but improving. And you have many reasons to believe it will continue to improve. Chief among them being that you have a coach who buys into the quarterback, which has been hit and miss for the Bears. Matt Nagy was not bought into Mitch Trubisky by the end of their first, their second year together. And Matt Eberflus was never bought into Justin Fields, I don't think. So you have a coach who believes that this is the quarterback, and you have a quarterback who believes that this is the coach. And for all the right things that Caleb Williams said as a rookie, there's no way he believed that about Matt Eberflus and Shane Waldron.
Nope.
He
Six weeks into the season, we knew he didn't believe
that.
He
clearly believes that about Ben Johnson. And, Pat, that comes back to the same thing I was just talking about, results. And Caleb said it very well himself. He said a lot of things about why he buys in and accepts very hard coaching from Ben Johnson. I mean, Ben Johnson can be merciless on him, and really was in the offseason, in the first part of the regular season. He said when the things he tells you, then you go out on the field and they work.
Right.
That's it. You don't have to like how he says it. You don't have to like his tone, his volume, his frequency, or whatever. But, man, if it's the truth, you want it. Because Caleb Williams, whatever you heard about him leading up to the draft, a lot of that has not seemed to be true to me. Caleb Williams is a serious, serious person, a hard worker, someone who has huge goals and attacks those goals. He knows that Ben Johnson is someone who can get him there, that Ben Johnson has the answers to the test.
Can I quote DJ Moore? Maybe please. The best quote of the year?
Yeah, please.
Somebody asked what Ben's magic formula was, and DJ said, well, you either want to get screamed at or you don't. And that is you cannot like his tone, you cannot like his attitude, but it works. And even Ryan Poles, when I talked to him in August, was talking about the proof of concept, even in the dumb preseason games. The proof of concept was important for his players to see so they could continue buying in to what's going on.
You asked about the coach quarterback. Mm-hmm. Connection right now, and the quarterback going into, let's just say, I know we have the playoffs coming up, and that is going to tilt our thinking quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But Caleb going into what will be year three, I assume that you have arrow up on him going into 2026. How do you compare where Caleb is at going into year three to the previous two guys? Mitch going into 2020 and Justin Fields, I don't even know if he made it a third season. Did he? Was it 21, 22, 23? Justin Fields going into 23.
Justin's second season was one of the great things I've ever seen covering football. He was until they made him sit out the final game, the best running quarterback anybody had ever seen. That was exciting. That was not sustainable, and we knew it. Mitch Trubisky in his second season had marched the Bears down the field at the end of a playoff game and had lined them up for a makeable field goal. We spent all offseason telling ourselves, because I believed it to be true at the time, that if the Bears had made the field goal at the end, Mitch Trubisky would be hailed as the guy who rallied them back. They would have gone to L.A. I thought they had a puncher's chance against the Rams.
They'd beaten the Rams that season.
And Vic Fangio had figured them out. So much so that Bill Belichick used Vic Fangio stuff in the Super Bowl to figure out the Rams. So I was optimistic about Mitch, who, by the way, played most of the game today in Buffalo. I don't know whether you saw that. Caleb Williams, I think, just put together the finest single season a Bears quarterback has ever played. Mm-hmm. That's a very low bar. I'm willing to admit that. But it's not just passing. I mean, it's not just passing yards. It's keeping the ball out of harm's way. It's, shoot, you know, there aren't a lot of Bears quarterbacks that have won 11 games, to tell you the truth. And I'm very excited about what he's able to do. And if you look at some of these numbers, he's completed 58.1% of his passes. His coaches want him to complete 70. If he gets halfway there next year, boy, they have something. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, if they – I mean, he's a top eight. I mean, he's in that Jordan Love range next year. If his completion percentage improves, if his accuracy improves a little bit, and, you know, I think you need to give him, you know, I don't think they need many more offensive weapons, but I think they need a left tackle or at least somebody to compete with Ozzie Trabillo.
They either need to get one or Ozzie becomes one.
Yeah. And I think they need, I think he would benefit from an improved defense, just the same way all quarterbacks would. I don't know why you wouldn't be thrilled with the potential that's in front of you here.
I think you see flaws in Trubisky, Fields, and Caleb Williams at the end of their second season. But with Caleb, I don't think those flaws are going to doom him. No. When you look at the flaws that Mitch had, I mean, you're at the end of him and Nagy's second year together, and Nagy is saying openly that Mitch doesn't know the offense well enough, and Mitch is not good enough at reading coverages.
He's not reading defenses. Yep.
Matt is saying that into a microphone mm-hmm. at that time. You have Justin Fields, after 2 years, still getting tricked by opposing defenders, still poor pocket presence as a passer, still a run-first guy who has trouble getting to 200 yards passing every week, practically, and who has no touch for the first pass. He's throwing everything 1,000 miles an hour underneath, and it just isn't working. I look at Caleb, and I see a guy who can make high-end plays that neither of those guys could make. I mean, we saw that from Caleb, his rookie training camp, that he was a more talented, higher-ceiling player than either Mitch or Justin. I also see, you know, the throwing accuracy and some of the timing and some of the slower processing as he's trying to figure out how to operate in a new offense. The footwork changed. I mean, Ben Johnson was really clear going into the season that nothing hardly at all carries over from how he was coached last season to now, that this is all new to him. I also think that from Caleb's perspective, compared to the other two, Caleb has the right coach in a way that those other two did not.
This is his partner.
Matt Nagy's magic, it turned out, was having Andy Reid around. And
having Vic Fangio's defense around.
And having a world-class defense, not just the best defense in the league in 2018 and 19, but that 18-19 span, the Bears were one of the best defenses you've seen in decades. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were elite championship-level defense. Obviously, the flaws of the inadequacies of the Matt Eberflus era don't even really need to be said between him and Shane Waldron and Luke Getsy. Caleb has the right guy teaching him in a way that Mitch and Justin did not. So while Caleb has his flaws and the throwing accuracy and completion percentage are the first things that come to mind, Caleb has such a better opportunity to fix those things because A, he's just flat out more talented, mm-hmm. and B, he has the right coach teaching him.
Jason, we'll preview the Packers as the week goes on, but real quick before we go, Packers are 1.5-point favorite. Are you surprised by that?
I thought the Bears were.
Nope.
I didn't see that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Packers, 1.5-point favorite in a primetime game at Soldier Field. Why?
Because that's what they were 2 weeks ago.
Really?
Yeah, 3 weeks ago. Yeah.
Huh. A team that a lot of people see as kind of folding here at the end. Interesting. Oh, I did want to circle back. We forgot to talk a little bit about the postgame. Ben Johnson reminded me of Ben Johnson weeks one and two. Mm-hmm. Specifically week one. Because it was all the build-up to Ben Johnson's debut. Yeah. And then they lose the way they did to the Vikings on Monday Night Football to open the season. And, man, he was mad after that game. And he was having to bite his tongue in that press conference. Today felt the same. Today felt totally annoyed. Very short answers. Answering before the question had even finished. That was angry Ben Johnson. And one of the amusing things, and I think it's actually an encouraging thing to observe over the past, I would say I've really seen this over the last 4 to 6 weeks, is Caleb parroting Ben.
Yeah.
Caleb is talking, saying the same things and saying them the same way mm-hmm. that Ben does. So Ben talks first and it's very short, very annoyed, and out the door. And Caleb comes in and it's like the same thing.
Caleb looked like he was ready to go run sprints outside or something. Like he was quick. He wanted to get out of there, and he was not happy.
Do you think he was in a hurry to go get a tattoo that said single season franchise passing leader?
It says take that, Eric Kramer.
Because you asked him about it. He seemed real thrilled.
The number is
about the record.
The number is the number, I believe, was his quote after kind of stammering for 5 seconds.
After what, 5 days ago? Saying, this is why I was brought here?
I was brought, yeah. I want to be the best Bears quarterback 4, of all time.
I'm not saying that to make fun of Caleb. I understand why he feels the way he does about it.
I did so preface my story with, or my question with, I know you're frustrated but.
Yeah, it's not a shot at you. I just want people to understand kind of the temperament that we encountered from the coach and quarterback after the game. So if you are happen to be listening to this and thinking that we're making too much out of this just brutally ugly, boring performance against the Lions, just know that the coach and quarterback feel the same way, except probably more intensely.
And, I want to find this quote before we go from Ben Johnson. It was, "We can't dig ourselves in a hole like that. I was disappointed in the offense as a whole. I let those guys know it."
Yeah.
There you go.
You know what else he said, though?
What?
Classic Ben Johnson. Classic Ben Johnson. After watching debatably their ugliest performance of the season, it's up there. Ben Johnson says, "New season, we start fresh, and to make the most out of this season, we got to go on a 4-game winning streak," which of course would then mean winning the Super Bowl. And he goes, "Which we've done twice this season."
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how that goes. A little tougher competition.
Ever confident. I love it. I love it.
And what's crazy is with the game on Saturday night, I mean, a week from now, as you and I sit here, we will either be done with Bears locker clean out and the season will be over, or they'll be getting ready to host either the Eagles or the 49ers.
I'm not sure. I haven't gotten it. We just got everything like within the past hour. I don't know. Do you want me to figure it out, or do you want to let the people figure it out?
We'll let the people insert that.
Because they reseed after the first round. It could go a few different ways, I think.
We
know they're not playing Seattle, and we know they're not playing Green Bay a second time.
Yeah, we'll add that.
They're not playing the sixth seed. Who's the sixth seed?
Either,
San Francisco.
Yeah.
So they're not playing Seattle or San Francisco. We know that.
We'll add this in post.
Okay.
Do we have post?
We do not.
We do not.
No,
anyway.
We don't have the budget for that.
Anyway, so yeah, 7 days from now, the Bears will either be on to the next one or on to summer vacation. Jason, we will break down the Packers game and more coming up this week. Until then, people can follow me, you, and others, Mark Potash, who writes for us a couple times a week as well, on social media. Check us out at Sun-Times website, on the app, on your phone or tablet, or if you live in town, buy a paper. He's Jason, I'm Pat. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back again real soon.